Hey everyone, welcome to Seen That, the podcast where we talk about cult and classic movies we haven't seen until now. In this week's episode, we're discussing Milk and why Haley,
hey everyone,
hasn't seen that and much more. Hope you all enjoy. Thank you again to our dear friend Liv for coming on our show last week. That was so much fun. We learned so much.
Yeah, that was, I would have 1,000 episodes like that. Liv should be our like third host. I mean, it was such a delight and I learned so much about archaeology and that movie, I think. But I mean, it just like turned me on to a whole other subject that, I don't know. It's just so fascinating and really, really cool. And yeah, it's really fantastic.
She will definitely be on again.
Oh, absolutely. We'll try to pick another movie that Liv is the expert on.
Exactly. I'm sure there's many.
Yes, yes. But this was really special and we thank her for being on. And it was so much fun. So that was such a blast.
We dig Liv.
Yes, we do.
And I also dig feeling busy for the first time in a year.
I
actually had plans this weekend and pardon maybe what sounds a little bit like I'm frazzled or out of it, but that's because I'm a little tired. I enjoyed myself in a safe outdoor hang with some immediate family members and it was really nice. And I've definitely been feeling like my old self pre-COVID in terms of like, Sunday scaries. I've got all these things I gotta do, which is like a weird, nice change of pace.
I agree. I think this is the first Sunday I've had Sunday scaries. There's a lot coming up with work. There's a lot that I did over the weekend and had to do and was running around. So similarly, I am just sort of, we kind of like plopped ourselves down here, you guys, and we were both like, oh, sorry, we're so, you know, crazy today. But I think it is important to like make this time and we're so thankful for it. But yeah, we're a little out of it today, but that's okay.
And speaking of, you know, social interactions and, you know, being with friends and with loved ones, we are, as I mentioned at the top of the episode, we're discussing Milk today. Yes. And Harvey Milk, I hope you would agree with me, Haley, was a very charismatic, very social, very friendly guy. And
yes, he brought a lot of people together.
Yeah.
With loved ones, with their chosen families and their friends.
Yes. So we are talking about Milk. And just some quick facts, as we always provide about the movie, was that it came out in 2008. It had a budget of $20 million and it made over $50 million. It made $54.6 million to be exact. Nice. It was directed by Gus Van Sant. It was produced by Dan Jinks and Bruce Cohen. And it was written by Dustin Lance Black. And it stars Sean Penn, Emile Hirsch, Josh Brolin, Diego Luna, and James Franco. Also, other people
as
well.
There were so many people in this movie. Allison Pill.
So many people. Victor Garber.
Everyone is in this movie. It's crazy.
Right. Yeah. It's a big ensemble film. Even though, clearly, Sean Penn is the star. Yes. And does steal the movie. But it's about him.
Yeah.
About Harvey Milk. So, makes sense.
Yeah.
Just a quick summary about it. It is a biographical film based on the life of gay rights activist and politician Harvey Milk, who was the first openly gay person to be elected to public office in California as a member of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. And you can find it on Amazon Prime, Google Play, Vudu, and a bunch of other streaming platforms. It doesn't look like it's free with any subscription anywhere.
No, although I think it was almost free on Amazon if you watched it with ads. That's how, that's not how I watched it, but I saw that option when I was about to play it and then decided not to watch it with the ads, obviously.
I was going to watch it at home because I was with my parents this weekend again and thought about looking it up with their cable subscription, but just did not have the time. And as I think we'll discuss, this is not a heavy movie in the types of themes we've been discussing previously, but it is a long movie and it has a lot to say and there's a lot going on. And so like I would argue this, again, isn't a movie you can just kind of like throw on. Maybe like a scene here or two you could just like watch casually. But if you are trying to watch the whole movie, it's, you need to be,
you
like,
need
ready.
To like, yeah, be sitting and like, right, like really be like, we're going to watch this today.
Yes.
I did end up watching it with my parents because I also was home over the weekend, and I was surprised at how long it was. But yeah, it was nice to, normally I watch these movies kind of alone with David, like in the room, but David's kind of usually on his computer and like doing other things. So it was nice, as you've said in many episodes, to kind of have a few other people with me watching one of these. And it was kind of funny because, you know, I obviously am watching this for the podcast and we both take notes during the film. We both sometimes like pause and then stop and write things down and look things up. So mm-hmm. I kept being like, Dave, pause it. I was like yelling at my stepdad, like, Dave, pause it. Or like, we need to stop this and I need to write this down. Or so anyway, that was an interesting, new, fun experience, at least for this movie.
Well, I'm glad you had that viewing experience. However, Haley, I must ask the standard question on this podcast of, why hadn't you seen that? Because this film was an instant classic when it came out, mm-hmm. When it was released. It was both commercially and critically successful.
Yeah.
Especially with acclaim going to Penn's performance. Sean Penn plays Harvey Milk. It received 8 Oscar nominations at the 81st Academy Awards, including Best Picture. Sean Penn went on to win for Best Actor as Harvey Milk. And Dustin Lance Black won for his screenplay, Best Original Screenplay. Mm. This also comes out when we're entering 9th grade or we're about to enter high school. Mm-hmm. And so we're starting to learn more about, at least I remember learning more about LGBTQ movements. And this was actually the first time I'd ever heard of Harvey Milk when this movie came out. And that got me curious about him and what he did. So with all of that in mind, why, Haley, hadn't you seen that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I remembered this movie like as it was coming out, and that, you know, there was a lot of Oscar buzz. I don't know if I necessarily remembered when it came out. I remembered that there was Oscar buzz around this movie. And, you know, back at that time, you know, you're home with like your families and, you know, not everyone had like their own laptop. Back then, it seems so weird to say back then, in 2008,
13 years ago.
Yeah, like we're in high school, there's like nothing to do on like a Sunday night. So you're sitting and like watching the Oscars, and like that was like a big deal. And then you were talking about mm-hmm. the fashion and everything. But so anyway, I was very familiar with like, you know, just watching that. And that was really the first time I'd heard about this movie. And I know my mom had watched it because she, you know, was really like every time it got nominated, she would be like, oh, Milk was so good. And, you know, she loved it. So that was sort of my two associations with it prior to seeing it. And I guess I just didn't really know why I hadn't seen it, other than like, strangely, I feel like this movie kind of like almost died out of popular culture for a while, like in terms
like
of
it came and went.
Yeah, like it was like really hot, and then it sort of disappeared almost, and you know, maybe it just wasn't on my radar. But I almost, like, because I hadn't seen it, I kind of like had forgotten it. And another, you know, the Best Picture that year went to Slumdog Millionaire, and I love that. And so that, I think, like, kind of,
I've
not that they're
never seen
oh Slumdog my Millionaire. God, okay. Okay.
There's literally a movie every single episode that we figure out.
Well, this is like how we're creating our future seasons, you guys.
We're always creating content for ourselves.
Okay, sorry. So we're gonna definitely watch that, like 1,000%. And so anyway, I have to process that. Okay. Yeah, so I like was obsessed with Slumdog Millionaire, and I know these movies aren't similar, but basically that won Best Picture, and I was obsessed with that, and like it kind of, I guess for me, like took over in the space of my mind, other movies from that year, and then another movie that I haven't seen, but you know, have just heard a lot about in popular culture, a movie from this year or that year was The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. That was also like weirdly one of those things that was like you just hear about it, you kind of know the plot. Mm-hmm. And I feel like and like Frost Nixon and things like that. So it, I feel like, unfortunately, at least in my experience, this movie kind of got lost in the shuffle. And I feel like that's why I hadn't seen it. And then, as you know, it had always kind of been in the back of my mind, like when I remembered or like, you know, when I would see it on lists, like as I'm scrolling through of things to watch, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I should watch that. But again, I knew a little bit of it about what it was. So I was kind of like, oh, I don't know if I'm in the I don't know. I need to like really be paying attention right now. I'm kind of in a lazy mood. I don't want to like commit to this right now. Yeah.
Think too hard. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. So, you know, that's sort of the reason why I hadn't seen it in the past. Long-winded answer.
No, I 100% agree with that. And I think if it hadn't been for my sister, who's also, she's also named Olivia, and I call her Liv. So not the person we just had on our show last week.
Different but my Olivia. Own sister,
different Olivia. She was obsessed with this movie when it came out. Mm. She saw it, I think, in theaters. I forget the rating for this movie. I don't think it's R. I think it's like PG-13. So yeah, she saw, it
didn't seem like
she
R.
was like, she's 3 years older than us. So she was almost graduating high school and saw this movie several times. Like, I think it was a Christmas gift for her on DVD when that was still a thing.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. We definitely have this movie on DVD.
Wow.
Which irked me when I was like, I could just watch this on DVD for free, but whatever. It was worth the $4. I enjoyed this movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, if it hadn't been for her being obsessed with it, I agree with you that I don't think I would have seen this probably until maybe now or maybe later. Mm-hmm. So I think that, yeah, there were so many other great movies that came out that year that kind of did overcrowded the field, and it definitely took up more air, more space from this. But doesn't take away from how great of a movie I think this is.
Yeah, no, I weirdly think, like, I mean, obviously it got so much critical acclaim at the time, but even in 2008, or maybe we just were so young and we're not as active in certain movements as we maybe are now.
Right.
So I feel like back then, again, in my experience, I don't want to speak for you, Av, but like a movie back then about gay rights was not necessarily in the pop culture. Like it definitely got Oscar buzz, I think partly because of just the subject alone. Obviously a lot of other things contributed to it, I think, being a great movie, but I think that was one of those things where it's like if you made a movie about something like this, gay rights, or you made a movie about like slavery, it just automatically sort of got that Oscar buzz. So yeah, I think that's partially why it sort of died out a little bit, because it wasn't necessarily picked up by, you know, society and popular culture. It was specifically picked up by the Academy. And I don't want that to diminish this movie's importance. I think it is unfortunate that that is the case. Does that make sense? Sorry.
I think so. Like, this movie wasn't as it was like popular because it got Oscar buzz and because it was critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
Not because that is an issue that people at the time were more attuned to.
Yes. And I want to be clear. We, again, were much younger. And, you know, obviously this has been a fight that people have been fighting for many generations. Obviously, like this movie, this came out. The time that this movie takes place in is way before 2008. So I was just saying it felt like that's why, at least in maybe bubbles that I was in, that's why it had gotten lost in the shuffle, unfortunately.
I get what you mean. I think that's an important thing to note. See, we're already getting into it.
I know.
And I'm only asking one question. It seems to me, kind of like to your earlier point, that this movie, maybe because it was a mainstream commercial critical success, that it was able to sort of make it okay, quotes around that, of course,
yeah,
to make movies about gay or LGBTQ identifying people, real or not. I can't say for sure if this movie helped, you know, pave the way for that. I would argue it helped. I don't think it only did that, or it's the first to do that, because there's a lot of other films before this movie that have gay or LGBTQ identifying protagonists. But I do think there's been more since this movie came out.
Yeah.
And so it's there's a more that we can talk about, that we can see, that we can compare, contrast, which is good. And then we've mentioned that before, that the more there is, there's more variety and there's just more voices and more experiences and nuances that can be enjoyed, not enjoyed, but at least it's there for people to see and consume. And that's good, because if there's just one kind, that's not a full representation of, you know, how other people either in that group experience life.
No, absolutely. And I think it's also important to note that, again, back in 2008, this was still a number of years before gay marriage was actually legalized in the U.S. So, like, it was kind of still, I don't even want to say, like, a hot button topic. It was almost still taboo a little bit. And people, like, kind of felt weird, I think, talking about it, because it was like, well, it's actually illegal and, like, whatever. So, like, even just talking about that was much different in 2008 than it is now. I mean, yeah.
I agree. And actually, good thing you mentioned that, because in the wiki, where else do we go for info these days? In the wiki, under the release section, it says, in the months leading up to Milk's release, Focus Features kept the film out of all film festivals and restricted media screenings, seeking to briefly avoid word of mouth and the partisanship it could generate. Milk premiered in San Francisco on October 28, 2008, initiating a marketing dilemma that Focus Features struggled to face due to the film's subject matter. The studio hoped to stay above the politics of the ongoing general elections, especially California's anti-gay marriage Proposition 8, which parallels the anti-gay rights Proposition 6 that the film that is explored in the film.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
What is it? Life imitates art. Art imitates life.
It's a cycle. Chicken or the egg, I think.
Yeah. So that's, again, it doesn't seem like this film came out with that in mind, that, like, oh, it's going to come out right as this proposition is getting discussed or up for, you know, being decided on. But coincidentally, I do think it made people realize that this, we still have a long ways to go.
Yeah.
And the fact that it is 2008, and, you know, speaking in that time period, and gay marriage is still not legal.
I mean, it was also like, it was 7 years before gay marriage was legal. I mean, 2008 was when Obama was elected. So, I mean, it's like, seems like a bajillion years ago. I mean, it was such a different world back then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interestingly enough, on the wiki page, it says, gay activists called on Focus Features to pull the film from Cinemark theaters chain as part of a series of boycotts because Cinemark's chief executive, Alan Stock, donated $10,000 to the Yes on 8 campaign. Why $9,999? What a dick. To that campaign. Like, ugh.
No, it's like,
that's a clear statement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, 2008 was 13 years ago. In some ways, it does feel like a totally different world. In other ways, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of touched on it before. But, you know, yeah, did you have any other impressions or understandings of what the film was about, what it was trying to say before you saw it, and even maybe in 2008 when you know it came out?
So, yeah, other than, you know, the top line sort of key elements of the film, I didn't really know much about, like, I didn't know the nuts and bolts of it. I basically knew it from the Oscar buzz. I knew that Sean Penn was in it and that it was about a gay politician. And I think that was, like, my baseline, you know, very early on. And then through, like, I think just hearing about thing, you know, you pick up things over the years, I feel like I picked up that or the other major plot point, that he was assassinated. But, you know, those were the only things that I kind of knew going into it. I didn't really know much about Harvey Milk at all and his story and how much he impacted San Francisco and that community. I think even just knowing those, like, bare minimum of things, that's why maybe sometimes I was, like, hesitant to watch it, because I knew I wanted to give this movie, like, my full attention. And, you know, you want to be able to sit and be ready for it. And I think sometimes I just was like, I don't know if I can do that at this moment. It's been a long week or whatever dumb excuse I had. But, you know, you want to give it it's due.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And again, this is a long movie, but I think paced well, and I think has a lot it needs to say and a lot it needs to show, but in a way that it's not so, like, you know in the beginning of the movie, and if you Google right. Harvey Dent, you find out that
Harvey Milk.
Oh my God, Jesus Christ. No. Who's Harvey Dent?
Okay, I weirdly, okay, Harvey Dent is from Batman.
Oh my God.
Okay, weirdly, every time they were saying Harvey, I kept like picturing, what's her name? Maggie Rachel? Gyllenhaal being like, Harvey, you know?
Harvey.
Yeah, I don't know what
is. Is he the like Two-Face?
Yeah, I don't know what it is about, or maybe I think... Honestly, I think I've seen maybe two movies with one of the main people named Harvey, this one and Dark Knight. But I feel like anyone that's named Harvey in a film, they just write the name Harvey 1,000 times in the script. It was like, Harvey, Harvey, Harvey. And I don't know. I think that I was like, is that a thing with the name Harvey? Or am I just like, is it just because it's not a common name? Did you pick up on that?
I didn't even think of Harvey Dent until the moment I said it. So, like, watching the movie, I'm not thinking about that at all. And I don't know why.
I don't know why I couldn't get that out of my head. I just kept hearing Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Harvey.
Harvey. Anyway, sorry. Sidebar.
No, all good. What was I saying? That this is a long movie. But so it, you know, if you Google Harvey Milk, you know that he was assassinated in 1978. So not spoiling anything there, but there is all this other info besides the year leading up to his assassination that we do need to know as viewers if you really want to sort of get to know him and have a better understanding of where he's coming from and why he's an activist and why he's trying to fight and why he's trying to make a difference and a change.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, and also I was just going to say, I mean, I had no clue who assassinated him. I mean, none. And I didn't realize it was like a fellow politician and all that. Like, that to me is like a huge, almost, that was almost like a twist for me, weirdly. Mm. And I know this is, the movie is based on true events. I was just sort of like, how odd that I'd never heard of that person. I mean, maybe that's weird in itself, that like America tends to sensationalize like serial killers and things like that, and you know the yeah. names like Ted Bundy and you know whoever else, but I had no idea who this guy was, and the idea that he killed a politician, two major politicians, like, and was also one himself, like, that kind of was, I didn't really see that coming. And anyway, just all that to say, I think this movie helps, I guess, show also how it wasn't just some kind of crazy person that assassinated mm-hmm. him. It kind of showed like this.
I mean, he was drinking Diet Coke right. and eating junk food.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. And for those who don't know, what Avril is referring to is the case that
the defense
that Dan White's lawyers made mm-hmm. In defense of his actions, that he was just like, his brain was addled on like so much junk food, and they called it like the Twinkie defense or something. And yeah, that is just terrible and stupid. But yeah, I didn't know about him, so that was kind of a shock to me, and that we'd never heard about him. I'd never like heard that name associated with this, or even just, you know, I had no idea.
I want to say that's a good thing, because I think it's more important to know Harvey Milk.
Absolutely. I kind of do think it's a good thing. It was just so strange to me. I'm like, well, he was actually another like politician, right. which is like crazy.
But then what's on the flip side of that, he gets almost no jail time.
Yeah.
And he killed not only a fellow politician. I mean, murder is wrong. And there's different degrees of murder, of course. But he kills not only Harvey Milk, he kills the mayor of San Francisco.
Yeah, like,
that's and gets a fucking barely big 5 years of jail time. And I think, as I just said, I'm glad you weren't really aware of him. I mean, that's who killed Harvey Milk. There's very little negatives, I think, from this movie, and not about the movie, just like things you can take from the movie that upset you. And that's one of the things that did upset me was the fact that he basically got off and he killed himself a couple years later.
Yeah.
Which is also tragic in a sense. But that to me was just so astounding and surprising that he did what he did and didn't really seem to get the crime didn't fit the punishment.
No, I agree. And, you know, it is so weird. I mean, again, we weren't alive at that time. So it might have been different. Like, you know, everyone back then may have known his name. But I guess just like, you know, again, about Ted Bundy, you're like people who assassinate, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald. You know, it's not like, I mean, even if their, you know, sentencing doesn't fit the crime, let's say, you know, everyone knows who that is. And again, you know, we weren't there at this time. But like, also the name Dan White is so average.
Generic.
And generic. Yeah. Like, the idea that he could like be released from jail, you know, not that many years after and kind of just go about his business as like a, almost like a regular Joe, a regular Dan White. I don't know. I mean, again, I'm sure people knew his name back then, but that is just like kind of weird and scary to me. Like, I don't know. That'd be like if no one remembered who OJ was and like OJ was out and like, and you just no one like remembered what he, I guess it feels like that now because we weren't there, but, and obviously he's not around, but you know, it's just weird.
I think it's better overall that I don't really think of who killed Harvey Milk. When I think of Harvey Milk, I think of what he did and what he stood for.
I think that's more important too. Made.
I agree. Yeah. So, and I think the movie does a decent job of not, obviously Dan White is the villain, but there is humanity there. There is some, I don't know, but sympathy.
I think we've talked about before, some of the best villains are humanized because you have to understand where they're coming from. And right. We know that this, again, is real life events. But I mean, I think it's important to also see like where Dan White was coming from and that they tried to work together and that, you know, where his family background was. I mean, weirdly, again, I didn't see this coming. So I am like, why are they like focusing on this guy so much? And like, wow, they're like really spending a lot of time like with this guy. Like, oh, maybe he like works with him later and like, or maybe he comes out and like changes his mind. Like, I had no idea what they were, you know, I had no idea about this person. So yeah, you get a sense of like where he is and where he's coming from and you know, maybe that he's like trapped between in his mind and with his morals and what his family expects of him and what his, you know, district people might expect of him and all that. So, I mean, again, we're not saying that that's like any excuse of his, but just it obviously humanizes the villain and makes you
see. It gives context.
Yeah, it gives it context and just makes you see, you know, that there are a lot of people out there that have that exact background that Dan White had and are stuck in that also, like, you know, may work with an LGBTQIA plus person at work or something. And like, maybe they're getting shit from their conservative family and maybe they don't know what to do. And like, yeah, it just gives a lot of context to Dan White.
It does. And, you know, I might do some research on my own after we record this, but I'm curious what that conversation was. I'm assuming it's true that happened between Dan White and the police force, or, you know, when he tells Harvey Milk, yeah, I'm quitting, I'm leaving, congrats, you got this passed. And then he gets pulled into an office with a bunch of police officers. And then the next day it's, I want my job back.
Yeah, that was so confusing.
I'm really curious what transpired, you know, what kind of conversations. I mean, I think they might have cut a deal with him. That's the impression I get. And I agree, for the purpose of this movie, that doesn't need to be addressed. That's not really the point. It's just he really started to lose his grip and clearly had anger issues and had a drinking problem and did an awful, awful thing. And it's tragic in that sense, but also in the fact that it would have been so nice to see him and Harvey work together.
Yeah.
And clearly Harvey was willing to do that. He was not. But like, I found the scene, the baptism actually to be kind of sweet.
Yeah.
Like I found that to be like, Harvey was the only one that attended.
Yeah.
And like, you could tell like there were moments between the two of them that there's real camaraderie and understanding. And I know it's sort of hinted that Harvey thinks Dan might be gay,
mm-hmm.
that he might be closeted. I am not a gay person. I identify as straight, so I really can't say if that's true or not. And again, I don't know that much about Dan White as a person to know if that was the case.
Right.
I didn't pick up on that. And again, it's sort of like maybe a throwaway line or just something to laugh at, but because it's sort of framed comically in that scene. But if that is true, I wonder if that might have also contributed to his eventual anger and violence towards Harvey.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know if I was picking up on that either, or if there's any, I mean, in, you know, just reading again, like Dan White's like Wikipedia bio, I don't think there was any other evidence of that. Again, that's not saying that's not true, but again, it was such a different time back then that if you were gay, if you even wanted to be friends with someone who was gay, that was mm-hmm. a huge deal at that time. And
you could lose your job if you were a teacher in California, if you were friends with someone who was
exactly.
Who was gay.
It's, I mean, that
at least that's what they're proposing.
And that's criminal.
Six.
And so, I mean, we all know like pressure from your family on any matter can be really hard to deal with, I guess, just in terms of if you are in conflict with that. So and I feel like we're like on a thing about where, you know, we're not trying to defend Dan White, but I think, yeah, it's just important to recognize that there are a lot of like not only individual pressures, but like other societal, social, like familial pressures that can like drive someone to do something in like kind of a moment of anger. I don't know how, I mean, none of us know how premeditated this was from Dan White. But I don't know. And something else I picked up on just kind of as an aside about the way they framed it in the movie and the way that Dan White, again, just sort of walked in there like an average Joe. I mean, obviously he had been in that building that he had just worked there and everything. So he just walked into so-and-so's office and they were talking and he like walked through Harvey's offices and got him to come into his own office. And I think now if this movie was made, that I guess theme of like white male privilege would be sort of even more prevalent. But that is what I like also sort of somewhat picked up on a little bit throughout the whole movie. And then especially in that scene, like Dan White thinks he's entitled to all this shit and that Harvey's going to cave and, you know, do deals his way and everything. And if he doesn't get what he wants, you know, he's driven, obviously he had a lot of other factors, but like, there's also that sense, like he wouldn't just walk into it. Like if you are not, if you don't think you're privileged or if you don't think that you, there won't be many consequences or you're not worried about that, then that's like, there's a certain a level of privilege or like, I don't care-ness there. Like what can they do to me? I don't know how of sound mind he was like in those moments. But again, it's like, if you're afraid of the consequences, you don't do that. Like,
right. I haven't even asked you if you like the movie, like what you thought of it.
So overall, yes, I did like the movie. I weirdly though, in the beginning, I felt like the first like, okay, this movie's long, you guys. So I felt like the first 50 minutes were oddly paced for some reason. And then maybe it was just because I got used to it, or maybe it was just because of, I don't know, the movie had more momentum after he gets elected or something. But I felt like the first, I hesitate to even call it an act, but like just the first 50 minutes were very like slow to me. And then I was just kind of like, I'd paused it, you know, to like get a snack at that point. And then I didn't realize how long, you know, we had left. And then I was like, oh, there's a lot to go. So I was like, wow, I don't know if they needed all of that on the front end. But overall, I did like it. That was only my one, like, truly, like, negative, I guess, takeaway just as, like, a moviegoer. I was just like, you know, the front end is a little slow going, but it does pick up and it is worth it. And I did enjoy the rest of it. And but I did like it a lot.
Well, I'm curious, too. If it's not obvious, I love this movie. I think it's great. And I'm glad to hear that you share my same sentiment. I'm curious specifically about pacing and how the movie flows. What did you think of the intercut sections of real video footage? I think some of it was used from this documentary from 1984 called The Times of Harvey Milk, which is a documentary about his life and the aftermath of his assassination.
And I'd love to watch that too.
That was an Oscar winner in the 1984 at the 1984 Oscars for Best Documentary. So yeah, highly recommend. If I haven't seen it, but I probably will. Highly recommend that to our viewers, even though I haven't consumed it. But what did you think of that? Those pieces from the documentary, but that are, you know, real footage of, you know, the Castro district and of Harvey and of just life in that time, but also with the film itself.
Yeah. I thought that those like intercut moments were important to show. But in a way, I think this is partly why in the beginning I was sort of like a little bit let down. Like I wanted there to be, you know, obviously those intercut moments give a lot of context about what was going on at the time. I mean, in the opening credits is basically just all of these scenes of, you know, police raiding gay bars and people getting arrested just for being at a gay bar, you know, which is like so awful. So in like all these different cities across the country. So I think it's important to show, give the context. But I felt like sometimes I wanted to see, like in the actual movie parts, them showcasing that those actions. Like I wanted, like there's some scene where like there's all these, there's like a riot outside or like, you know, in that area about something, and they go, you know, to the riot, and or like there's all these police, you know, taking all these people out of this gay bar and arresting them, and then it kind of cuts to the scene where, you know, him and James, he's like dabbing James Franco's head because he like got bloodied, and I almost was like, I wanted to like see that a little bit, like I wanted to see them be in that, like it felt a little bit like, oh, they just cut away to this like, you know, documentary footage and then they like cut back. So I was kind of like, oh, so moments like that, I got a little bit like, you know, I wanted to sort of see more of like the actual on-screen characters being involved in situations like that, just because I felt like, again, as we've discussed in other episodes, I felt like it was important to the story. Like, if you don't see James Franco trying to, like, save his friends from the cops, you don't get that sense of, like, urgency. If you're just seeing this, like, newsreel and then it just cuts to, like, this intimate scene in the kitchen, I feel like, or I felt, specifically with that scene, that it kind of didn't highlight the like just how awful it was. I mean, I don't know. I just got the sense that like they it almost like was glossed over, and I'm like, no, like he clearly like went there and got hurt and was like fighting for people and fighting for his community and his friends and his people, and they kind of didn't show that. And obviously later on they like, you know, with Harvey's speeches and all the political campaigning, like you see that fight a little bit more. That's why I think it picked up the movie. And I feel like they used a little bit less of those shots, of those like documentary shots. But that's why I think partly why I thought the beginning was a little bit paced weird. And partly why I think like those scenes are great, like in the opening credits and things like that. But certain times I felt like the actual movie was sort of using them as a cop out to like, versus like actually filming something that maybe would have an impact on an audience. And not to say that it wasn't impactful. I just think it could have been more impactful.
Right. I understand your stance on that. I did not feel that way watching the movie. Mm-hmm. I thought it was cool to see these interspersed parts of reality of what actually happened.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool to see, you know, what actually happened. And then if not a direct, you know, replication or reenactment, then yeah, like what would happen next. And then that's displayed by the actor. So I thought that was cool, but I understand your point. So sort of changing topics, I knew at the time that most of this cast was straight, playing gay people, like, because they're not just characters, they're like real human beings.
Yeah.
Which the end credits give the actors who are playing the real person and then the real person's, you know, sort of bio and what happened to them after Harvey's assassination. And even remember some interviews with Sean Penn and James Franco and some of the main stars being asked questions like, you know, what is it like to kiss Sean Penn? What is it like to make out with another male co-star? Mm-hmm. All with the assumption or the context of like, you're not gay and you're straight. And like, how does that make you feel? Again, 2008 was 13 years ago. And I don't think people would ask that question now.
Yeah.
Regardless of how that actor identifies.
Yeah.
But I am curious what your thoughts, if you have any, on the fact that these are straight actors playing gay activists.
Yeah. Yeah, I did note that, honestly, very early on. And I felt sort of weird. Like, when I had paused and my mom was like, so what do you think about it? I was like, I don't know. Does it feel weird that all these straight people are playing gay people? And I guess just it seemed like there was a lot of like white men in this movie that I knew to be straight white actors. So it seemed like they're just sort of getting their 15 minutes when like actual, you know, members of the gay community were sort of being shunned or silenced or maybe have not have gotten these roles at that time. So that felt a little strange for sure. And I was trying to like, I guess, express that to my mom, and I wasn't doing such an eloquent job of saying that. And she was like, I don't understand. And again, it's like a different time. But yeah, I guess it did feel weird. And I don't know if 100% though today that like movies only cast gay people if they're gay. I mean, I think people do a better job of it now for sure. But I, another movie I have not seen, like I have not seen Call Me By Your Name. I don't know if both of those actors are gay or straight. But
well, Armie Hammer is a cannibal.
So. Oh yeah, I forgot he was in that movie. But I like, I truly don't know about Timothy Chalamet. So, but like,
it's or not to my knowledge that they identify as gay.
I don't think
they do. I think they identify as straight.
Oh, okay.
Because I know Timothy Chalamet in the past. I mean, we both agree that sexuality is a spectrum. And it's fluid. And
it's not like you are gay or you are this. But I guess just...
Right. In the past, Timothy's dated women and so has Armie.
Okay. Yeah, and I didn't know that. So when I was, you know, trying to say to my mom, like, oh, I guess it feels weird that, like, there's all these straight people playing gay people. I guess that, you know, obviously still happens today or in movies that, you know, have come out fairly recently. Maybe it was just, I don't know, maybe some of the language or maybe it was just that it was men that, I guess I haven't seen Sean Penn in a lot of movies, but he's so sort of like, I guess I just see him more as like gruff and like manly. And so the idea that he would be like playing a gay man when like, you know, many actors, you know, couldn't have probably gotten that role if they didn't have the, if they didn't have the like all the caliber that that is behind Sean Penn, you know,
This is kind of like a loaded question, so.
No, I definitely felt weird about it. And I also weirdly, maybe this is just like my opinion about some projects that James Franco takes on or just my opinion about him. But like, I felt like I wrote like, of course, James Franco like wanted this role. Like, I know that sounds maybe harsh, but I was like, he would definitely think it's like, oh, such an art housey, like total cool opportunity to like play like a gay character. Like, you could just see, I could just feel, I don't know James Franco, but I could just feel him like saying that. And I just like, that felt weird to me. And I didn't like his character that much until like the end. Anyway, that's sort of a sidebar, but I agree with you on that. Excuse me, I'm talking, Miles. He's meowing.
He has an opinion, too, he'd like to voice.
I don't know what else to say other than, I also thought it was a little weird, maybe. I don't know.
I think Sean Penn does an excellent job.
I thought he did, too, honestly.
It's like, this is oversaid, but I think it's true. You forget you're watching Sean Penn play Harvey Milk, and you're watching Harvey Milk. He just totally encapsulates who Harvey was perfectly, I think. And I do think a lot of the other performances were great, but I do think there's something to be said about casting an all straight cast, essentially. I don't know if all the actors still identify as straight or at the time did, but I know that most of them did. And so a movie like The Normal Heart, which is a play that was then made into a HBO movie that stars Mark Ruffalo and Matt Bomer, that had a more mixed cast of gay and straight actors.
Yeah, it felt like it wasn't that, I mean, people might, you know, take this whatever way you will, but I felt like it's not that, you know, a straight person can't ever play a gay person. I feel like, right. I mean, I'm not an actor, but I feel like personally that, you know, the whole job of acting is to like, you know, play and put yourself in a role that you empathize. That you are not. So whereas I think like women can play men and men can play women and all that stuff, like I, you know, that's not to say that, you know, gay people can play straight people and vice versa. So but it did feel like, from what I knew about some of the major actors in that film in this film, that yes, I felt weird that it didn't seem like a more mixed cast. And then also on the, I guess, less mixedness of this, it was very white. I couldn't help but not think it was a very white and very male. And I couldn't help but not feel that. I was like, wow, there's literally no women in this movie. And then like literally like so long until she gets there. But Allison Pill comes in and plays
their campaign manager. Their campaign manager. Leaves.
Yes. So. Yeah. I mean,
and Diego Luna is, I think, is the only person of color besides, I think there's one other person within the campaign team, but I don't even think they get a name. And if they do, it's not said much and they don't get a bill at the end with, you know, the rest of the cast. So, forgive me for not having that person's name or character's name off the top of my head, but it is very white. Yes. Cast wise. And like, I don't know if the documentary will provide more or shed more light on if that truly was like his circle. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think it was more diverse. I really don't know. And I think that's, you know, a decision that gets made at a higher level that they think is good for whatever reason. Ending this topic on just because this is a biographical movie, you know, this is based off of a real person's life and real events. It's maybe more difficult to be critical because, if this is an accurate or as accurate as one can be, then we don't really have anything to be critical of in that regard because this is depicting the truth. But we just don't know. It's hard not to notice, again, with the movies that we've gotten accustomed to seeing.
Yeah.
The diversity that we're, you know, at least more diverse cast that we've been seeing in more films, it's hard not to notice these things. I don't think it takes away from the movie that much, but it is something that you and I both did pick up on. And interestingly enough, Gus Van Sant is openly gay,
mm-hmm.
and he was the director of this film. So he clearly had, you know, a part in casting. And so I'd like to think if he's at the helm, you know, he's got a reason for, you know, selecting all of these actors to play these roles. And I'm sure they had conversations about sexuality and identifying as this or that. I'd like to think that was the case.
Yeah.
I feel like, how can you not in a movie like this? Well, and the, I should also mention the screenwriter, Dustin Lance Black, is gay as well.
Mm.
So, you know, they're making this movie, you know, they, I trust their judgment, but I do think of another film like The Normal Heart that has more of a mix. And I think that's, I personally think that's a better representation. I think that's a better inclusion, a way to include and represent and, yeah, in a sense, give opportunity to actors who maybe don't always get those roles.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if you picked up on this, and it's literally for one scene. In a way, I can appreciate the blatant sexism that the Alison Pill characters, that Alison Pill's character receives
mm-hmm.
by one of the campaign staffers. I forget the guy's name that makes some kind of condescending comment to her when she first gets introduced to the group. And her name was what? Anne Cronenberg?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Alison Pill plays Anne Cronenberg, who becomes the campaign manager once Scott Smith leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And she's an open lesbian and the only female on that team, in that group. And, you know, just because somebody else is, you know, has attraction to the same sex doesn't mean that they're going to be maybe as empathetic as you would think. And so the fact that she's getting not only shit for being female, but also being a lesbian, I thought was unfortunate, because like you would hope, and I think they do show later on that there is understanding and they all come together and she's very much accepted by their group. But there was, you know, not always great relationships between gay men and gay women. And, you know, you could still have gay men being sexist towards women, regardless of how they identified. And like, it's in one scene only, but I thought it was effective in showing that like that was a reality.
Yeah, I think
and still is in some ways.
Yeah, I was almost like shocked they even sort of brought that up, just in terms of, again, I felt like there was things that maybe they weren't like focusing on in the gay community. And, you know, it was really about Harvey Milk and his campaign, but, you know, and his political office. But I did think, again, back to the diversity thing and everything, like they were sort of about like bringing people together in this community. And, you know, they were always, you know, it showed they were always at like pride marches and things like that. And for there to sort of be only one mention of like how they're incorporating lesbians into their mm-hmm. like deals and
coalition.
And, yeah. And, you know, in drafting the bills, obviously, like this movie is about something in the 70s. So that also dates it. But I'm not sure if there was conversations that were had in real life by Harvey and his campaign people about including, let's say, trans people or, you know, just any of the other persons that might be gender fluid. So I think, like, you know, there's the 2008 lens and then there's the, like, 1970s lens. But I feel like, you know, if it were made today, if there was evidence that Harvey was trying to include more people, you know, people of color as well in the gay community, I think like that would have been shown. So I was surprised that they even like mentioned that, because I almost had gotten used to the like, oh, this is kind of just about these gay men, which is great, and like this man's fight, and like, you know, it's not really about how he's trying to like, or I mean, she did ask, but you know, they weren't highlighting like him including many other people in the drafting of those bills and things like that.
Yeah, again, I would hope this documentary, and I'm sure there's books and there's articles and lots of info we can read up on or consume that would maybe provide us with these answers or give us more context. And so all we've seen is this movie, and that's probably a fraction of what's out there and what's known about him and what he tried to do. But it probably doesn't give the full picture.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give benefit of the doubt that there probably was a more diverse campaign staff, and there probably was more inclusion with minority groups and gender oppressed people. So
I guess just to comment overall, I felt like there was so much in this movie that it almost felt like there were sometimes holes or like people that they mentioned at a certain point. And then I'm like, were you supposed to have mentioned that person before? Like, I don't know. It seemed like there was a lot of like almost gaps in certain stories. Like, you know, when like James Franco sort of re-enters the scene and I'm kind of like, oh, he's in this room. But no one's acknowledging that. But like, did we acknowledge that? Or was that something I missed? Or like, are they going to acknowledge it later? Like it, I don't know, maybe it was accurate, but I just felt sometimes I was like, that's a weird, I guess, or maybe a little bit jarring way to like tell that story. You know, at the end, you know, when he's at the opera, I feel like they had mentioned the opera once before, but was it a big thing? What opera was he seeing that was like relating to, you know, his story? I felt like we should have like heard about, like, I know this was a biographical film, but like in the storytelling of that, I felt like we should have heard about, you know, how important this opera was, or like what this character is going through and what that means. I'm not sure why he was drawn to that opera and like, and what that meant. So it almost like, I felt a disconnect in that moment because it was such a poignant moment for Harvey when he's watching, and then when he sees it again through the window at the end, you know, the banners of the opera. And I guess I just was like, what is the opera? Like, I wish they told us. I mean, those are like sort of weird little things that I kind of wish, you know, there was a lot to tell in this movie. But I think sometimes I wish they like left some things out and brought in, you know, that's like a major moment. How do you not tell us like more about that,
right?
I guess
I agree that it doesn't have a constant presence. It's not, we're not like being reminded of it here and there.
Yeah,
it sort of really does take center stage, no pun intended, at the end of the movie. But I do remember a scene in the beginning when Castro Camera, the shop that he starts in the Castro district, he's gathering all these guys who sort of become his group, and some are involved in the campaign and others are, you know, just sort of around and are involved in other ways. They mention opera because it's playing in the background.
And they do start kind of dancing around and singing.
And I hate that I don't know his name, but the Ryan of Sharpay and Ryan.
I know, the guy from High School Musical. I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, good for him.
He like makes this whole, like, he literally tries to sing opera and is like, it's so dramatic. And so like, there's that reference right at the beginning.
I know, yeah.
But then it kind of isn't ever really referenced again. And maybe there's moments, intimate moments between him and Scott or him and Jack where opera's playing in the background, but it's not talked about anymore until the end. So I agree that it's not, if it's meant to be a theme, it's not really present that much, consistently at least. Also, I did not see the Jack death coming at all. And I almost felt like he gets sort of, I don't know if this is like a choice by Diego Luna, who plays him, or if this truly was how Jack was as a person, but like, it was almost like a caricature of like a needy partner.
Yeah. Yeah.
That like, I was getting annoyed with like how much he was dependent on Harvey.
I know. I was kind of like, Harvey, just break up with him. Like, right. You're smarter than this.
But then to see that it ends up that he kills himself is really tragic. And then I felt really bad for, you know, wanting him to be out of Harvey's life, because it's like, that's not how you want it to go. And clearly Harvey's heartbroken over it. But and he sort of alludes to that. He's like, three out of my four partners have, you know, killed themselves because I kept them a secret from my family and my friends. And so I think Jack becomes like the fourth person in his life that, but I didn't see that storyline going that way. And like, that was a shock to me.
Yeah, me too. I didn't think it was going to end up there right away necessarily, but there were moments where I was like, he's going to cause some scene or he's going to, I almost for a second was like, is he going to assassinate him?
I could see how you would think that.
I just, my mind, you know, was going all over the place. And then when he like breaks in and makes him dinner, I was like, is he going to poison him? Like, I just had all these thoughts and I was like, this is crazy. And yeah, but some part of it, maybe it was just the portrayal that Diego Luna projected on screen, but it did a little bit feel like a caricature, but maybe he was sort of a character of a person, you know, like some people kind of just have personalities like that. So yeah, that felt like I didn't see that coming, except for, I mean, right when he walks in the house, I knew.
Like, oh, I didn't even pick up. I thought he was just gone. I thought he had left.
Oh, but he but, like, left all those
messages.
No, was just like, I knew. I was like,
I've seen this movie before, but I'm thinking like my first time watching
it. Right.
Everything I just said about the storyline of Jack, I'm talking about as if I've seen this for the first time.
Yes.
This is not my, like, this most recent watch, I didn't have that feeling.
Yes, anyway. I understand. yeah, I'm just curious what you thought of Harvey's push for, you know, people in the community to come out. You know, as a person who has family members in the LGBTQIA community and, you know, friends as well, I know how important that moment is. So while I was somewhat like, yes, I understand the sentiment, I did get, I think it was a great sort of moment that it also showed people's hesitation and how difficult it can be and that it's not so easy. I mean, I thought that that was just an interesting point in the movie, and I didn't know that he had kind of sort of pushed for that. And I think that's the first time, at least in a film for sure, I've heard, you know, someone in the community sort of really push other people to like almost forcibly come out. Because I feel like most people would say that, you know, do it on your own time and it's your own sort of journey. But again, I'm not speaking for everyone, and I'm definitely, you know, not speaking for everyone in that community. I thought that that was really interesting that he sort of pushed for that.
I do too. And I honestly feel torn. And again, I am an ally, but I am not an identifying member of the LGBTQ+ community. I feel torn. Even though I don't have anything personally at stake regarding it, I have moments, like in this movie, watching it, you know, you're like, yes, come out. Privacy in this case is harmful and it's hurting people. But it is a personal, private thing. It is something that is so important and changes someone's life and their relationships, potentially, for better or for worse, that I feel very torn about it, but I guess I do think at the end of the day, it is up to that individual and how they feel about it and how they want to go about coming out. And I would argue too, we shouldn't have to live in a society where this is even a question, but we do, unfortunately. And so because of that, I do think it is sort of based off of one's experience is how they feel they can best go about it. Because I can only imagine how hard that is for somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was almost weird. I was shocked that he was, again, you know, I agree with you. I am torn in that, you know, you want everyone to be able to come out or just sort of
be
as they are and be accepted and not even have to really have a big moment, because you don't need that as you don't have to have that as a straight person. That's like a luxury and a privilege that we have. So you want sort of everyone to be out, and then you also are trying to, like, I was also like, oh, but you let them do it as they want to,
right.
Harvey, you know? So I was, it's crazy that he was pushing for that, because I also thought, you know, in his push for that, he was fighting the bill that other politician was pushing, that, you know, oh, if someone identifies, or if you know someone who is, like, you'll be fired, they'll be fired, you know, they'll be arrested, yada, yada. So I was almost like, I understood his sentiment, but I was almost like, you're giving them, like, the ammo almost, or you're giving them the, I don't know, I understood his view on, you know, this is us taking back the power. But in that time, if everyone who was gay at the time did come out, or maybe even half that or a fraction of that, I don't know if, like, that wouldn't have stopped them then from being arrested or beaten or just, you know, ostracized by their friends and family. Like, that's really tough. And I think James Franco says, like, you can't ask these people to, like give up their families. Like, it'll, you know, you have to sort of handle this more delicately. So, I don't know, I just thought that was, like, a interesting topic that kind of isn't spoken of yet.
Yeah.
Or like, the like, forced coming out versus, like, you know, viewpoints on just when to come out, I guess.
Right. I guess I'll just ask, is it overrated or underrated? Or do you have any other comments or questions you want to say before? Oh my God, Miles is so cute.
Oh, he's just sleeping upside down on the bed. Oh, little baby. Little belly. Hi, bug. So I think it is, I'd almost say underrated, because I don't hear a lot of people talking about this movie, so I feel like it should have permeated throughout the culture more. But I do think it is, I mean, to be fair, it is long. And some parts of the pacing I felt were a little bit off. But I do feel that the story is important, and there are great performances in this. I really do think Sean Penn did a great job, honestly. But some of it, yeah, I will admit, I almost hate to, but, like, some of it, yeah, is dated, and not in that it takes place in the 1970s, but it is just dated in that even the way we were, you know, writing about and portraying gay people on screen has changed since 2008. So I think if this movie were made today, there would have been a lot of changes. And I think one scene, I guess, that particularly sticks out to me, I guess that's, like, the only one that I would consider, like, cringy, I felt, was when Harvey is at, like, a business meeting with these two politicians. He's trying to get their journalists. They're trying to get their endorsement. And his boyfriend is just, like, swimming naked in this guy's pool and, like, gets out. And I'm kind of like, is this, like, what – maybe it's what really happened. But I guess I just – not knowing if that really happened or not, I guess it just felt like, oh, do people think, like, gay people just need to be naked all the time? Or, like, do people think, like, that James Franco needed to be naked in this guy's pool? I guess I just was like, that seems like something that some conservative person who's never met a gay human in their life, like, it seems like something that someone would think gay people do. And then I was like, not that they can't do that, you know, whatever, but it just felt a little bit like, did that really happen? And, like, why did he need to be naked? And, like, it just felt like, why? Like, I don't know. I felt like it wasn't helping. I don't know.
I do think that scene can be read in a couple different ways. I read it more, though, as, like, maybe Gus Van Sant's attempt to, like, not objective... I mean, one could argue that is objectification of James Franco's body, but...
Who cares? I mean, no, sorry. I just mean, like...
Misandrist over here. But maybe more of an attempt to playfully show the carefreeness and the openness that
That's true.
Scott Smith, the character that James Franco plays, the person that James Franco plays, feels in his body, in this environment with these other people, that like that's an aspect of the gay community that in that scene gets touched on. That's how I viewed it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't think you're wrong. Again, I think that can be read several different ways.
No, I think that's a good point that you bring up too. And I guess I just meant like, you know, in the way that women's bodies are always objectified on film. So I was kind
that
of like,
true.
You know, saying that, oh, you could see James Franco's, you know, butt. And I don't think it like, I don't think it was negatively harming him in any way. And I at least in my view, so I don't know. Yeah, I it's weird. There's I feel like we go through this with some movies. There's so much, and then there's also, you know, not a lot to I guess pick on in terms of like cinematically. I mean, it was beautiful and it was great, but there are some movies that we talk about that I guess you just, you know, we go through every little thing and there's so much here just being that the subject matter is so important and there's so many facets of this and, you know, ways to talk about this. So, you know, we're only going to scratch the surface and sorry if we like missed anything, you guys. There's a lot we clearly did. But I just want to say, you know,
go see the movie.
Yeah, go see it. I mean, it's
would you recommend this to our audience?
Yeah, I think it's important. And again, I think, again, maybe I've said this in other episodes with other things, but it's I think it's also important to see it. And then it's important to not be super critical of it in holding it up to today's standards.
Right.
Like, you know, there are things that it could have done maybe better, but I guess just look at it from a look at it from like a 2008 lens. And I think it, for the most part, did a pretty good job from a 2008 lens.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Because, you know, with everything, it's like, you can't like, you know, compare everything up to today's standards and like have anything that's like going to be perfect. I mean, you're just not.
Exactly.
But I think it's great to see how things have changed and progressed and improved. Like, watch it and recognize, oh, hey, like, even in 2008, we were saying things like this and we were referencing that. And it's so weird because I think there's a moment when Harvey's talking about another potential, I think, another gay politician who's running. And he calls him the F word. And I was just like, oh, my God, I can't even remember the last time I'd heard that. Whereas like a number of years ago, that was like, you know, you'd hear in like middle school and like high school, like guys just calling each other that and like all these things, you know, as derogatory statements and, you know, just kids like bullying each other. But like everyone sort of woke up and was like, that's not a thing you say anymore. So I can't even remember the last time I've like heard that. And just like, I guess like looking back, it is interesting to just see, I guess, how far we've come.
Yeah, I think at one point Harvey's talking to Dan and says, Dan, I think, refers to him as queer or says that word, and it's in a derogatory sense. And Harvey responds, we don't really like to be called that, you know, I'm a gay man.
Yeah.
Or something to that effect. And it's like, now watching this movie, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that the LGBTQ+ community has reclaimed that word back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a stamp. And it's a badge of honor.
Right. It doesn't mean what it used to.
Right.
Yeah, I think we don't need to preface every episode with that, especially with the older movies that we do. But any content you're consuming that is of a time, be aware that it's of a time. It might not make things okay. It might not make... You might still have a reaction to it that's justified, but it... What am I trying to say?
I think I get what you're saying, and I agree.
If you want to enjoy it the way that it was intended to be made and can still watch it knowing it has those faults, not because they were faults at the time, but they are now faults. They are now things that, you know, we wouldn't see or we wouldn't hear or we wouldn't put in a film or a TV show, whatever. So It's always be a conscious consumer, I think, is really what we're trying to say. And that's very broad in general, but it does apply to movies and, you know, any kind of content you're consuming.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, 13 years from now, we're going to be, you know, looking at movies that are made now and being like, oh my God, you know, what were we even saying? So it's, I think just things progress and just, you know, especially movies that take on like a social or political issue that's very hot button at a certain time. I guess just, you know, be aware and, yeah, look at it through the lens that of that moment. Because I think in that sense, it definitely does hold up for me. Right.
No, I would agree with that. Also, talk to your friends. Talk to your family members.
Yeah, like, again, watching something like this, like I watch it with my parents, and when I had paused it and was like, oh, it's weird that these, I guess like what we were saying, that it's not sort of as mixed of a cast as we would have liked in terms of people of color, women, and people in the gay community. I was trying to explain that to my mom, and even just, you know, talking about it like that, like that, I don't know if I would have ever had that conversation with her, but it sort of prompted that. So, I mean, there's, you know, things that could be said for that. And not saying you need to watch, you know, every like movie with your parents, you guys, but just it could bring up an interesting conversation.
I agree. And I think it's always good if something, whatever you're consuming, interests you enough, you really like it, you really don't like it. It's always just good to just find out more about it. Yeah. And that can give that extra context. You know, you'll only know by trying if it was worth finding that info out. And the conversations it can potentially spark can be really invigorating and intellectually stimulating and just enlightening. And that's never a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you for coming to our TED Talk on how to be a conscious consumer.
Thanks. I noticed you had the soapbox. We will get off our like soapbox now after this episode. Are going on tangents and everything.
I guess like we could just make a mention of like, obviously we found this film important and we both really liked it, and like the work that Harvey did was vital and extremely important, but like the fight continues, of course.
Oh yeah. And but it did made me want to again watch that documentary, know more about him. It made me think of, you know, all of the other people, and not that he was a minor politician, but he was only like a city supervisor, so like, I mean, he had a big impact, but it makes me just think of all the other people who like aren't getting press, so I don't know, I or hadn't gotten press, so I don't know, it was a good film and eye-opening, and I think it's important to watch at least once, and I will say I liked it, and I will recommend it to you guys for sure.
And I also have been interested, outside of this podcast, in reading and watching more kinds of content on the AIDS crisis, which, again, doesn't get touched on in this because Harvey Milk is assassinated before that really becomes a thing in America and across the globe, even though his partner, Scott Smith, their, you know, on and off partner, does die from it in 1995. Mm-hmm. Another person that worked on his campaign, I forget their name, unfortunately, was it Clive Davis or Clive Jones?
Are you talking about the quilt The guy who did the quilts?
Yes. One of the Clive, people that worked on his campaigns.
The guy who Emil Hirsch plays.
Yeah, yeah. He helped with the quilt, which now I'm forgetting the name of that project.
I mean, my mom had referred to it as the AIDS quilt. That we'll look it up really quickly, you guys. Okay, so correction.
The name's Project AIDS Memorial Quilt.
By Cleve Jones.
Cleve Jones, yeah. So it seems like maybe some in his circle, in Harvey Milk's circle, would later on go to be involved and do more activist work in the AIDS, during the AIDS epidemic and crisis. And so that's just something that I've been more interested in learning about. And so something like How to Survive a Plague, which is a documentary that I'm probably going to watch. And there's tons of things you can read, books and whatnot, about it. So, you know, if this movie interests you, inspires you, that's great. And there's so many things within the LGBTQ plus community that can be explored and discovered. And that's, if you can find an avenue to it, that's great. I just kind of wanted to make a note of, like, this is still ongoing work.
Yes, it definitely is. I guess just to bring it home, I want to, I guess, bring it back to Harvey himself and the legacy that, at least from the film, it seemed like he wanted to continue. And obviously his friends and coworkers helped, or some of them at least helped to push that forward. So, I mean, I just, you know, watching this and things that he was fighting for, I do, I guess, still have hope for, you know, things pushing forward in our lifetime. And, you know, I mean, we'll definitely hopefully see further changes, if not in the next, you know, 4 years, I hope so, with this new administration, but also beyond that. I mean, there are so many future things to look forward to if we keep fighting for it and if we keep pushing and if, you know, our voices are loud enough. So we just need to, like, keep holding the megaphone.
I could have not said that better myself. Way to bring it home, Hale. That wraps up our conversation on Milk.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to be watching next week, Haley?
Oh my gosh. I'm really excited. Weirdly,
I'm really scared.
Next week, yeah, you should be, and maybe not. We'll get into it next week.
Now
we are
not
watching
the time to live alone and watch a scary movie.
Oh yeah, next week we will be discussing The Exorcist and why Avril hasn't seen that, and that's going to be fantastic. I'm so excited. I think you're going to be
terrified,
surprised. That's all I'm going to say. So with that sort of cliffhanger, thank you guys so, so much for listening. Please follow us on Instagram at seen that pod. That's, at SCENETHATPOD. You can keep listening to us on Spotify, Stitcher, and Apple Podcasts. Please follow us on those platforms as well, so you get notified every time there's a new Seen That episode. Remember, we are all in this together. Stay safe, wear your masks. You know, if you're eligible, try to get those vaccines. And we love you guys, and I love Avril.
I love you all. I love Haley. I love you, Miles. Until next time, bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.